we're in Joseph, and today we're going to talk about trust a little bit. And trust is a very valuable commodity. It's hard to obtain, and it's fairly easy to lose. And trust is one of the most significant ingredients, I think, of all human relationships. And who among us has not suffered from its loss? You know, maybe you've been on the end where you've acted inappropriately, or you've said or done something where you've lost trust with someone. Or, you know, maybe someone else or something else has happened where you no longer trust another person. And I wanna just talk about a few things today related to that. And maybe just a couple of questions. Does forgiveness mean you trust someone, maybe a person or organization that let you down? Is that what forgiveness means? Okay, good. We're all nodding no. That's all right. That's true. So what bridges the gap between forgiveness, when you forgive somebody, and trusting them again? What's in the middle of that? What has to happen? This is the part where you answer. Yeah, conflict resolution. The number one leading thing most married couples do not have. Just so you know. Bad communication, poor conflict resolution, the number one thing. Keep doing the same thing over and over that doesn't work and wonder why it's not working. But that's another day, another message. What else is in the bridge between forgiving someone and trusting them again? Caution. Yeah. Yeah. Caution. Yeah, proof. There's an evidence that something's different. And what's needed for that to occur? Time. Time keeps on ticking. Sorry, I don't know how we're going to do a Steve Miller song right there. But yeah, time. Time. Flashing back to 1974 as a sophomore at Quabbin Regional High School. I'm having one of those mornings. I'm a little bit in hyperdrive, so if you have a hard time following me, it's not you. It's me. Okay. So Joseph has this unique ability to test his brothers. Time, trying to gain back trust with them. It's been almost 20 years since they threw the guy in a pit to leave him to die and then sold him into slavery. But he is going to test his brothers, and he's got a unique position that we don't always have because they don't recognize him. He doesn't have a Hebrew beard anymore. He's second in power in Egypt. They think he's an Egyptian. He dresses, he acts like an Egyptian. And he has a chance to interact with them because of a famine that's been going on for 7 years, which, by the way, he predicted. So he's in this unique position, but I want you to realize that sometimes we need to test people once we've forgiven them so that we can trust them again. It might be, in Joseph's case, it's a test of time. It's a test of someone's jealousy, and it's a test of self-preservation. And there might be other tests that you want to do. But here's the big thing. There's a couple of things, and these are asides, but they're important. One thing is that Joseph had forgiven his brothers, and there's evidence as we've studied over the last 8 weeks. And I think his test, he truly wants them to succeed. His test of them is so that they can be restored in relationship. Oftentimes when we test people after there's been broken trust, we maybe haven't forgiven them, and we actually would like them to fail so we can stay angry and bitter and not have to trust them. Okay, I'm going to stop there, go and think about that, come back in a week. But that's what we do. I mean, think of how often in your life you've maybe had somebody let you down, or an organization, or the church. A pastor, a leader, a church has let you down. And if you don't forgive, you carry that with you, and it'll start showing up at the next church you go to or with other Christians. I mean, I face that frequently as a pastor where I don't even like people to know I'm a pastor. I mean, once you come in here, it's kind of obvious. But I would rather be real and authentic and see pastor as a privilege God gives me than something I carry, because I want people to feel like they can trust me before they trust me, if you get my saying. But oftentimes, we have a little transference where if we had a bad experience, we don't forgive, and then we're speculating that this is going to happen again or this person will do this, and it keeps us from participating and it keeps us from growing. or with an individual, whatever it may be. Boy, not forgiving and not and having a test, as long as you want the person to win, it doesn't mean that suddenly you're back in that relationship, but you want to have a test where over time you can see that a person's changed. Sometimes that means the conflict resolution skills, where you're actually addressing what the issue was, or you're sharing openly about what's hurt you or what's offended you. So as we go through that today, remember, Joseph's one of the guys who nothing was ever said negative about. This is Old Testament. I think we can take some of this as some principles to follow in regard to trust and rebuilding trust. And I want to share an illustration that you will hopefully get. So Janet and I will be married 31 years on the 24th of September. And one of the trust issues throughout our marriage has involved me and these chocolate chips. And she used to buy small bags, but because of her trust issue with me, she now gets the 4.5 pounders. I'm also diabetic and not supposed to eat these, but, you know, every once in a while it's okay. So if these were in the house anywhere, I would usually grab this and dip. And I like the big bags because she can't tell how many are gone. And I'd mix them with walnuts if I was feeling healthy, or sometimes I just think, oh, I feel like a chocolate bar, but this is quicker and easier. And she'd go to bake cookies, and guess what? There's none in the bag. And this is my kryptonite. I like these. It used to be ribs. I overcame that, but still chocolate is tough. And she'd say, you know, those aren't for you. Don't eat them. And I'd say, honey, you're going to have to hide them, and no, I'm going to look. I can't tell you that I said, I'm a sinner, and I was serious, and I said, I'm going to lie, I'm going to cheat, I'm going to steal. Chocolate chips are kind of like my mistress. I'm addicted to them. Hey, you all have something like this, so that's why you're laughing. So over the years, I mean, when the kids were younger and they were disappearing, I could say, I think it was Drew. I saw Jessa with some chocolate on her, and I was lying sometimes. Or I'd give the kids some when I took them so I could say it was them and not feel like, you learn all these deceitful practices. But I'd tell her, you know, you're going to have to hide them better, and I could always find them. And this was like fun for me. It's like treasure hunting. So, you know, if I was going to hide them, and you know where I found these? She's getting better. They were in the drawer in my... Okay, I'm going to try some words with Oz this morning. They were in the drawer. Dawn, is that better or worse? They're in that thing you pull out in a dresser that had my old bathing suits. And sorry for the image there. I don't swim anymore, so I'm not looking in that drawer. But I found them. I mean, I'd maybe in my suits, maybe hanging them inside the jacket. I'd never look there. But I always could find them. She'd put them in baskets up in high places where she'd have to get the step stool to get them. And I'd look and see, I wonder what's in that new basket up on top of the... I could always find them. And I was not apologetic. I'd just say, honey, I can't ask you to forgive me because I'm really not repentant about this. I'm serious. I'd make it all biblical. And after all, I do work and bring home money, and you buy this with some of that money. So they are, all the rationalizations, all the justifications. And so and then I'm not repenting because I'm not really sorry. And then I can just keep finding them. Well, recently I told her, I said, you know, I'm going to do better. I'm going to try not to eat the chocolate chips, but you should still probably hide them. Should Janet trust me? What? No, she shouldn't. And why shouldn't she? I've done nothing but prove to her that when it comes to this, I'm not trustworthy. I'm really not. You know, I know on my gravestone it's going to say, our dad was a sinner, mainly in regard to chocolate. We're sure there are a lot of other things, but chocolate chips were his big thing. So I'm going to get cremated now just so there's not a headstone. So Joseph is in this same place with his brothers who aren't stealing his chocolate chips, much worse, sold him into slavery. And he designs these three tests for them. The first one is a test of time. Second one is a test of how they handle their jealousy. And the third one is that extreme ability all of his brothers have to practice self-preservation at all costs. So the past has literally destroyed his ability to trust them. And in order to trust his brothers, he needs to know and believe two things about his brothers. First, that they're going to tell him the whole truth, and that they were truly sorry for what they had done, both before God and before him. That's the key. That's why Janet doesn't trust me. She doesn't feel like I'm truly sorry. And she's right. She's a very discerning woman. As we continue today in Genesis, just a reminder, Simeon's still held in prison. They left probably 3 months ago and were supposed to come right back. It's maybe a three-week journey, so six-week round trip, five weeks at the most. He's been in there 3 months thinking, where are my brothers? And he's in prison. Jacob's other sons, when they were back there, ate all the food they brought back, and now they're all starving to death. And they can't go back unless Dad, Jacob, agrees to let his favorite son who's still alive, Benjamin, go back with them. And they finally convince him that the ruler won't even see them unless they bring Benjamin back. So he gives in, and then he also says, bring back all the silver that came home with you, bring back enough to pay for a whole other thing, and let's put together a gift basket of some of the finest things of our land and wrap it in papyrus with a bow and give it to this leader. So finally they arrive, and can you imagine that three-week trip? They're going back, and they're thinking, well, is this guy going to believe us about the money that showed up with us at home? Is he going to let Simeon out of prison, or is he going to throw all of us in there? If Benjamin does not return home, our father will die. What are we going to do when we get there? I mean, just constantly thinking about it on this trip. And you're either walking and leading a donkey or you're riding it. So it starts in verse 15. So the men took this present and they took double the money with them and Benjamin. They arose and went down to Egypt and stood before Joseph. And when Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he said to the steward of his house, bring the men into the house and slaughter an animal and make ready for the men are to dine with me at noon. The man did as Joseph told him and brought the men to Joseph's house. So to their great surprise, they arrive and they're escorted to this banquet at Joseph's house in his own private mansion. And the men were afraid because they were brought to Joseph's house. And they said, it is because of the money which was replaced in our sacks the first time that we are brought in, so that he may assault us and fall upon us to make us servants and seize our donkeys. Ah, the coveted donkey. There's a proverb, Proverbs 28:1, and this is so true, the wicked flee when no one pursues. Nothing like some guilt and sin to make you think everybody's after you. The brothers wasted no time in taking the steward aside. The minute they got there, the same man who had handled their earlier transaction and explained how they had found their money had been returned to him. So they went up to the steward of Joseph's house, and they spoke with him at the door of the house and said, oh, my lord, we came down the first time to buy food, and when we came to the lodging place, we opened our sacks, and there was each man's money in the mouth of his sack, our money in full weight. So we've brought it back again with us because we're trustworthy. And we've brought other money down with us to buy food. We do not know who put the money in our sacks. And remember, they think that Joseph thinks they're spies and untrustworthy men. And the steward responded by saying this. He replied, peace to you. Shalom is the word he uses, which is a Hebrew word. Do not be afraid. Your God, Elohim, and the God of your father has put treasure in your sacks for you. I received your money. So he's saying, you paid me. I don't know how I got back in there, but I'm thinking it was your God Elohim. So be at peace. This is your God. He's watching out for you. He's doing something nice. And they, because of their guilt, are not thinking that way. They're thinking, oh my goodness, how did this happen? Then he brought Simeon out to them, the one who'd been held in prison. And when the man had brought the men into Joseph's house and given them water, and they had washed their feet, and when he had given their donkeys fodder, they prepared the present for Joseph's coming at noon, for they heard that they should eat bread there. And Joseph's steward, again, what a response. Just be at peace. Elohim's at work. And how humbling it must have been for them that this Egyptian steward has more respect for their God than they do. So then this guy has the banquet prepared, and picking up in verse 26, when Joseph came home, they brought into the house to him the present that they had with them and bowed down to him to the ground. Remember his earlier vision that ended him in the well? And he inquired about their welfare, and he said, "Is your father well, the old man of whom you spoke? Is he still alive?" And they said, Your father, our father, is well. He is still alive. And they bowed their heads and prostrated themselves. The dream again. And he lifted up his eyes and saw his brother Benjamin, his mother, Rachel, Rachel's son, and said, "Is this your youngest brother of whom you spoke to me? God be gracious to you, my son." Then Joseph hurried out, for his compassion grew warm for his brother. If he had not forgiven his brothers, there'd be not much compassion here. And he sought a place to weep, and he entered into his chamber, and he wept there. Then he washed his face, because he had mascara, Egyptian, and it's running, because they didn't have waterproof mascara until 500 years later. And the Egyptians who ate with him, then he washed his face and came out, and controlling himself, he's having a hard time, he said, "Serve the food." They served him by himself and them by themselves, and the Egyptians who ate with him by themselves, because an Egyptian could not eat with the Hebrews, for that is an abomination to the Egyptians. And they sat before him the firstborn according to his birthright, and the youngest according to his youth. And the men looked at one another in amazement, because that should be the older one, bottom line is, if you look at this, they're in order from age, youngest to oldest, oldest to youngest. And portions were taken to them from Joseph's table, but Benjamin's portion was 5 times as much as any of theirs. And they drank and were merry with him. So as these brothers looked around the table, something became apparent. They're all seated according to their age, from the oldest to the youngest. And this couldn't be a coincidence. The statistics on this, that 11 people would sit in that order, are 39,917,000 different combinations. So this is the first time also in 20 years that all 12 brothers have been in the same place at the same time, but the only one that's aware of that is Joseph. And obviously, a lot has been accomplished by God and these sin-hardened brothers of Joseph's through the reawakening of their conscience. But now Joseph must know if over time these men have truly changed. And this leads us to the second test, the jealousy test. Then he took servings to them from before him, but Benjamin's serving was 5 times as much as any of theirs. So let's say you go to somebody's house for a supper club, and you're in there with 10 or 12 other people, and the host is serving Kentucky Fried Chicken. And everybody gets a drumstick and a little coleslaw and some potato and a biscuit on a plate. And then one person gets the $30 bucket with 3 huge sides and 12 pieces of chicken, if that happens to be in that. I wouldn't know, because I'm enamored with chocolate chips, not KFC. But wouldn't you stop and think, and let's just say it's your whole family and you have 11 siblings, why do they get the big bucket and we just get this plate? I don't even like coleslaw. You know, why do they get 5-6 times more than we do? And remember, Joseph's brothers are always jealous of each other. So this is his second test. And they drank and were merry with him. Benjamin now has the position of favored son of the father. And Joseph is wondering, are these guys still motivated by their jealousy? Because that's what it caused Joseph to be put in slavery. How would they react to Benjamin again being singled out and shown the most favored status? He was Jacob's favorite son. Now, although the brothers notice that he is given more than they are, there's absolutely no sign of jealousy in here at all. Verse 44, then he commanded the steward of his house, "Fill the men's sacks with food, as much as they can carry, and put each man's money in the mouth of his sack, and put my cup, the silver cup, in the mouth of the sack of the youngest with his money for the grain." And he did as Joseph told him. As soon as the morning was light, the men were sent away with their donkeys. They had gone only a short distance from the city. And now Joseph said to his servant, up, follow after the men, and when you overtake them, say to them, why have you repaid evil for good? I don't recommend this kind of testing when someone trips you up, but just in here, Joseph gets away with it. Is it not from this that my Lord drinks, and by this that he practices divination? And they're talking about his gift of dreams, not black arts. You have done evil in doing this. When he overtook them, he spoke to them these words. And they said to him, why does my Lord speak such words as these? Far be it from your servants to do such a thing. Behold, the money that we found in the mouths of our sacks we brought back to you from the land of Canaan. How then could we steal silver or gold from your Lord's house? Whichever of your servants is found with it shall die. It's always good to shut up sometimes and not make pledges. And we also will be my Lord's servant. So look, if what you say is true, kill the brother that you find the cup in, and then the rest of us will be your servants. I'd probably go with a different form of trying to negotiate. He said, let it be as you say. He who is found with it shall be my servant, and the rest of you shall be innocent. So he changes it. Then each man quickly lowered his sack to the ground, and each man opened his sack. And he searched, beginning with the eldest and ending with the youngest, and the cup was found in Benjamin's sack. Then they tore their clothes. So they made it to Egypt with Benjamin. They had this great meal. They weren't jealous. And they're so excited that they're able to bring Benjamin home to Jacob. And then, 3 or 4 hours after sunrise, they get stopped. Their plans foiled. Benjamin is a kleptomaniac. No, they put the cup in there. And they are so mournful that they tear their clothes. They are so taken aback by that accusation of having the cup. And the steward had been instructed by Joseph to tell them that the thief would become a slave, but the rest of them could go free. And then they come to the third test, the test of personal preservation. And this was the supreme test of character. And it came when the incriminating cup was found in Benjamin's sack. Benjamin's guilt seemed to be established by the discovery of the cup in his sack. And then remember, years before, they gladly sold Joseph into slavery. Yet now there is not a one of these brothers who did not wish that the cup were not found in Benjamin's sack instead of their own. They did not abandon him. They were sorrowful. And when Benjamin was taken back to Egypt, they went with him. They were ready to offer themselves in his place as Joseph's slaves. And then in the last part of verse 13, it says, and every man loaded his donkey, and they returned to the city. And when Judah and his brothers came to Joseph's house, he was still there. And they fell before him to the ground. And Joseph said to them, what deed is this that you have done? Do you not know that a man like me can indeed practice divination, that I know what's going on? Now, it's smoke and mirrors because he's actually creating it, but he's telling them, how dare you even try this? Haven't you learned in the past? And Joseph's heart must have rejoiced when he saw his steward coming home with not just Benjamin, but all the other brothers with him. Can you imagine him standing, watching from afar? It's kind of a prodigal son painting, kind of, where the dad's looking for the prodigal son, and he sees him way off in the distance, and the whole time he's anticipating him coming home. Well, here's Joseph, and he's wondering, is he just going to bring back Benjamin? Oh, look, there's more donkeys. All my brothers are coming back. Have they changed? Have they passed this test? Are they not cutting and running and just leaving poor Benjamin to become my slave? Picking it up in 16, what shall we say to my Lord? What shall we speak? And this is Judah speaking. Or how can we clear ourselves? God has found out the guilt of your servants. And he's speaking to 20 years ago with Joseph. Behold, we are my Lord's servants, both we and he also, in whose hand the cup has been found. And Jude is saying, even though we're innocent of this crime, boy, we sure weren't many years ago. And God is now punishing us for this. Now Joseph gives them one more chance to take the path of self-preservation in verse 17. He says this,
Far be it from me that I should do so. Only the man in whose hand the cup was found shall be my servant. But as for you, go up in peace to your father. The rest of you leave. Leave Benjamin here. And then Judah, who is much changed, again steps up, and he says this. Then Judah went up to him and said, O my lord, please let your servant speak a word in my lord's ears, and let not your anger burn against your servant, for you are like Pharaoh himself. My lord asked his servant, saying, Have you a father or a brother? And we said to the lord, We have a father, an old man, and a young brother, the child of his old age. His brother is dead, and he alone is left of his mother's children, and his father loves him. Then you said to your servants, Bring him down to me that I may set my eyes on him. We said to my lord, The boy cannot leave his father, for if he should leave his father would die. Then you said to your servants, Unless your youngest brother comes down with you, you shall not see my face again. When we went back to your servant, my father, we told him the words of my lord. And when our father said, Go again, buy us a little food, we said, We cannot go down if our youngest brother does not go with us. Let our youngest brother go with us, and we will go down. For we cannot see the man's face unless our youngest brother is with us. Then your servant, my father, said to us, You know that my wife bore me two sons. None of the 10 of you really count again. One left me, and I said, Surely he has been torn to pieces, and I have never seen him since. If you take this one also from me and harm happens to him, you will bring down my gray hairs in evil to Sheol. It'll be the end of me. Jude explains how all this will affect their aged father. And then he says, Now therefore, as soon as I come to your servant, my father, and the boy is not with us, then as his life is bound up in the boy's life, as soon as he sees that the boy is not with us, he will die, and your servants will bring down the gray hairs of your servant, our father, with sorrow to Sheol. This is Judah. A little bit changed after 20 years. So Judah now pleads with Joseph to allow Benjamin to return home with his brothers. And then in verse 32, he says, For your servant became a pledge of safety for the boy to my father, saying, If I do not bring him back to you, then I shall bear the blame before my father all my life. Now, therefore, please let your servant remain instead of the boy as a servant to my lord. And let the boy go back with his brothers. For how can I go back to my father if the boy is not with me? I fear to see the evil that would find my father. So here stood the man who had convinced his brothers to sell Joseph into slavery, now offering himself to be a slave. There is no doubt that he's truly repentant, that he's truly changed. Previously, we've seen the brothers recognize that when they have that what they did in the past was a great sin, and they have, I believe, felt real regret. And this is a good beginning, but regret alone is not something that brings about restoration. Now they're repentant. Now they recognize their sin and they own it and they truly regret it, and they've decided to turn from it. So these three tests, the test of time, the test of jealousy, the test of self-preservation, they've passed. Now, I don't know what you've been through, and typically when I ask this question, you're going to think about other people that have hurt you or who have broken trust with you, because that's our nature, and that's fine. But you want to take time to think about, is there anyone who I've broken trust with? Is there anyone who I'm still struggling to forgive? What would be a test in this relationship? And it doesn't mean you have to resolve every past relationship and be best friends again. When you forgive, you do it as much for yourself as you do for the other person. But I'd ask you today, is there anyone on your hook? Is there an individual? Is there an organization where you're having a hard time forgiving, where you don't have an appropriate test to see if that person is maybe worthy of some trust, or that organization, maybe a different one that practices the same thing if it was a church that hurt you, or a pastor? Do you have a test for these kind of things? Do you stop and do you pray and do you say, all right, Lord, I know it says as far as it concerns me,
live at peace with all men, Romans 12, 17, and 18. What do you need to be able to trust them to some degree? And if it's a close relationship, boy, that trust has to be rebuilt. With a husband and with a wife, the last thing you want is not to have trust. And a test is appropriate as long as it's a fair test. Time is appropriate. Understanding and helping is appropriate because sometimes people do things that they're not even sure why they do them. So a few things today as we wrap this up. Trust is a precious commodity. And at all costs, we have to protect it. It takes years to develop trust, but it can be destroyed by a single self-centered act. I'd like to think if you asked any of my five kids, what's your dad's number one thing in raising you? They'd all say, don't break trust, don't lie. They all know that if they do that with me, there's going to be a time for them to earn that trust back. Depending on how frequently they've done it or how serious it was, I don't trust them again until they've earned it back. Doesn't mean I don't love them. Doesn't mean I don't care for them. It doesn't mean that I shun them. It does mean that I blame them for chocolate chips occasionally. But other than that, they know that when they break trust, I'm disappointed and it's impacted our relationship. And I get that because I think that's what happens when I break trust with my father. I think he loves me. I think he cares for me. But I think it's harder for him to trust me, which means sometimes he doesn't give me more opportunities. Sometimes he doesn't lead me in the places where I can bless him, which is what I was created to do in Christ. Second one, when we do something to violate the trust that others have in us, we need to do whatever we can to seek to restore that, at least so they forgive us. And complete honesty is the door to restoring trust. Not partial, not excuses, none of those things. Complete honesty. And third, trust must be earned. It's not simply granted, and it will take time. Often those who are trying to rebuild trust that they've somehow destroyed will oftentimes say, you just need to trust me. That was a long time ago. You just need to trust me. And the truth is that when trust has been broken, somebody needs to earn it back. And that may take time, but it definitely takes seeing something a little bit different. I'd like you to just take a moment as the worship team comes up and think about what God is saying to you through this passage in Joseph today, and then I'll close in prayer. Lord, for many of us, there's probably a picture or a memory of someone who broke our trust. And I would pray that for each of us, in regard to that person, we would listen to you, and we would be at peace with how we've handled our part at making things right with that person. And in some cases, when a person's not repentant or they're dangerous or they're untrustworthy, we simply can't trust them. And that's not us, that's them. And we can leave that. But maybe have an open heart in case you're working on them to change them to possibilities in the future at some level. And Father, this one's a little bit harder for each of us, but maybe you're speaking to us about a time when we broke someone's trust, when we let somebody down. And I pray that you'd reveal to us how we make that right for your name's sake. So Lord, I want to thank you for just this lesson from the life of Joseph. And I want to thank you that it sure seems like he'd forgiven them, that he wanted his family restored, but that they needed to be tested so that he wouldn't become like he's stuck in a revolving door of trusting and having disappointment, trusting again and having more disappointment. That things worked themselves out in a way because of how he approached it, where he was trusting you and you orchestrated what could be a reunion and healing. And I pray that for each of us, wherever it's possible. In Jesus' name, amen.